Welcome to the Appen Appen Podcast, the podcast for people working in the real world of IT. If you're a sysadmin working on a help desk, a network engineer, an IT consultant, a computer tech who wants to know more about servers, or even if you want to get a job in the IT field, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Al.
And I'm Andy. And it's just us two again this week, isn't it?
Yes.
Jerry's got an excuse, so he's off to Italy. Or somewhere around that neck of the woods anyway. So anyway, another thing is, it's a bit of a milestone again for us, isn't it? Because this is episode 30.
Yes, so, it is.
We've made it to 30. And we've still got too much to talk about. So we've got nothing from Jerry. I don't know if Jerry's out there working on holiday. I'm not entirely sure, but
I'll show you if there's next time.
You can let us know next time, yeah. So otherwise, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been out and about doing some lot of switch work at the moment. So setting up some new swells. Actually, I mentioned in the last podcast on my own that we were just reorganising someone's network. They basically had a load of switches which are in daisy chain, and which basically mean that they had all their switches. They had two core switches, which all had a gigabit link off them, and they had like a trunk port between the two of them. So they had 2 gig between the link between them. But then after that, they had 6 switches, and one of the switches which connected to the core switch was connected by 100 meg, and then all the other switches were daisy chained off it. So if you see what I mean today,
yeah.
The 6 switch had 100, which was connected to a gig switch all the way through, but it was bottlenecked as a 100 meg. So if every one of those switches failed, or someone was transferring a massive file, the whole network basically ground to a halt. But using a thing called spanning tree, you can have multiple links in standby, so if something happens, those links come active. But I'll talk a bit about that later on in the show. So, but how have you been having fun with the? We were talking a couple weeks ago about the Draytex for one of your shops.
Oh, that's
your
right.
Shops.
Yes, the fancy wine bar. I've got some pictures. I'm gonna have to take some better pictures, especially when it's all finished. But during this week, since the last time we've been on, we've been basically going through a setup kind of period. The actual cafe itself isn't going to be open for a couple of weeks yet or something, so there's no kind of rush on it. But we were talking about last week about how to set it up, weren't we? So I don't know if one of the show notes was showing the one of the methods that we're using, which involved VLANs and tags. Now, I know on one of Mike Smith's show, the Mike Tech show, somebody wrote into that quite a few weeks ago now, I think, about how to do this. And I think they came up with a method that involved multiple routers. But the way that we came up with was possibly more expensive, this method, but I think an awful lot better for many reasons. So, we were basically trying to get 3 separate networks set up, all of them with internet access. Now, 2 of these networks were located right at the back of this building, so that where the original wireless wouldn't reach. So we had to throw in 1 Ethernet cable from the back of the building, from the front of the building, sorry, all the way to the back. So then at the front of the building, we'd replace their old standard router that was given to them by... it turned out to be Utility Warehouse. I think I said Talk last week. So replace that. And also, we put in a Draytek... Ooh, do you remember the number of it? VP80, I think it was. AP80.
What, that the,
yeah, AP, that the, yeah. AP80 it was. Mm-hmm. Access port, yeah. Which would go... at the back of the shop. There are two on the access point at the back of the shop. We had two wireless networks. One of them would be for the till credit card machines, and for the ultimately and for the other computer that's up there, at the back of the cafe. And one of the access ports is for the public to use, any of the customers. So ultimately, of course, we don't want the customers to have any kind of access to either A, the network, which has got the till on and the credit card machine in the bar area, and ultimately as well, right at the front of the shop, which is actually a separate sort of business, if you like, to have access to that either. So we wanted to separate them. So we did this, didn't we, do it with the with VLANs. Now, we talked about that a bit last week, didn't we, about how we were going to do it. Now, there's a link that we're going to put into the show notes, which is basically a page on the Draytech website just showing you how you can do VLANs and how you can set them up. So in the setup was when I was actually doing it, I was going through setting everything through, and I actually thought it was really, really easy to do, and I thought, oh, this is easy, this, I'll have no problem doing this, until I got to the point where I'd completely lost the local connection to the router. I'd done something and it's completely screwed it up in some way or other. And basically, it wasn't giving out DHCP, was it? I was talking to you a bit during the week, wasn't I, about some of the different problems, yes, I was having. So I said to you, it wasn't giving out DHCP. So I ended up resetting the router back to defaults on a couple of occasions because I kept messing it up. So I got to the point where I thought, right, so I've got to figure out now, how am I going to, what am I doing which is messing it up? Because I get to the first stage, it's set up one VLAN on port one of the router, and it would work fine. I'd set up a second VLAN actually use port six of the router, because that's where the cable was plugging into. So I set up VLAN. So VLAN 0 went to port 1, and VLAN 1 went to port 6. Sorry, because VLAN 0 went to port 1, 2, 3, and 4 as well. And VLAN 1 went to port 6. So I set that up, and everything seemed to work fantastic. And it was only when I started to put it onto a third VLAN, which is when I kept messing it up. So I had to restart it again and did it all again. Then the third time round, I was actually reading a link which you sent to me. And it's on the link that I'm going to put in the show notes as well. I suddenly read it and I realised what I'd done wrong. And it said, right, so then at that point I realised that the VLAN 0, which was local to the router, did not need to be tagged.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I was doing. I was tagging VLAN 0 with, just for a number, the tag number 10, VLAN 1 with 11, and VLAN 2 with 12. That's how I was mm-hmm. doing it. And then I read on the website, it said VLAN with a mix of tagged and untagged. In the setup below, VLAN 0 is left untagged while the other VLANs have been set to tag operation. And then I thought, oh yeah, VLAN 0 is not tagged because it doesn't need to be, does it? It's not going down through one port or whatever, so it doesn't need to be tagged. I thought, that's where I'm going wrong. So I restarted the router, reset it back to factory, and went through all the settings again. And then it worked absolutely spot on. So that was one good thing. The other, what were the other two ones I come up with? One issue,
you had a, you couldn't access the access point from the network.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, don't forget, because the access point is plugged into port 6 on the network, effectively on VLAN 1. And the only way I could get to the, you know, the login screen for the access point was if it was plugged directly into the access point.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, whereas it works, it wouldn't be very convenient in the long run, because the actual access point is going up on the wall above the bar roof. So, and unless there's some kind of cable was left in and they brought a sort of laptop along to do it, however they wanted to access it so they could change the password, it would be a bit inconvenient. So I wanted to be able to use one computer in the building somewhere, at least one computer where they could access it and change the password. So as you suggested, we just put, it was on port 1, so we just selected port 1 to go to VLAN 1 as well, didn't we? And that's how we'd get that link together.
Yeah.
So I did that and it worked spot on. So for example, the router's on 1.1 and the access point was on 1.2. And another good point about that as well is that people on the public part of the Wi-Fi do not have access to that either.
No.
Which is another good part. Now, the only issue that I had... So eventually that gave me three subnets, which were 1.1, 2.1, and 3.1. And ultimately, the public one is going to go on to 3.1. Now, the only issue that I had after that was somebody on 3.1, if they went to 192.168.3.1, while they were sat having a coffee in the bar there, they could get to the landing page of the router. Now, whereas the likelihood of them guessing the password and all that kind of thing is probably quite slim, I still didn't want them to be able to get to it that easily, at least. So then you suggested, didn't you, that we put the instead of the port of the router being on port 80, which is your standard one, to put it onto a different port number, so that they then have to know the port number in order to access it. Now, that works really well. It does work. But then I was thinking other ways that, you know, a hacker could figure out what port number it's on and thus also figure out the password. I think I don't know if I'm being over security here or whether this is just how security consciences should be.
Yeah.
But that works perfectly fine as it is, and that's how I've currently got it set up. But have you come up with another idea of how you can do that?
Yeah. So what you're basically saying, to get onto the admin page of the router, you just putting in the IP address into the web browser, and it goes obviously logs you straight. Now, I always change that to another port.
Yeah.
So that it's just not, and that's another step for stopping a hacker kind of thing. But obviously, if you've got anything like Nmap, you then could obviously run the Nmap against it, and obviously it would soon pick it up.
Yeah.
So what you can also do on the I can't remember where it's written, the Vigoids, but you can set up access lists. So you would say that you can only access the webmin admin interface from the 192.168.1.0/24 range.
Okay.
And that means that the people wouldn't be able to access it from the 192.168.2 and the 192.168.3 network.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. So is that in the... I'll have to look that up. I've got the manual somewhere.
It's under system maintenance, I think.
System maintenance, okay. I've probably
seen
it.
And then you can basically... It's like a thing where it says limit where the IP addresses you are. But before you do it, first thing, what I would do, I'd make a backup of the config first in case you make it up, and then you can just restore the config again.
Ah, yes.
So
I've actually made three copies of that so far. at different stages as I've gone along. You know, but it's set up. I thought, right, that's good. Save it. Then we've made these additional changes and I've saved them each time. So I'll make a save, and then I'll go in. Well, I'll look for it first, and then I'll make a save, and then go in and change that as well. But I think after that, once we've got that set up, the only thing we haven't done on that system at the minute is get the internet going on it, get the WAN port on it, mainly because I was there on Friday. But we're going to have to sort out another some kind of convenient time to do it, because it was just impossible to turn the internet off.
Right.
Because people were coming into the shop, and all of the receipts are all web-based. All of the... this isn't the cafe bit. This is the original shop in the front. So we said, we're going to have to turn the internet off in order to plug this new router in and then start testing it and everything. And they said, oh, well, we're best doing that when there's nobody in the shop. I said, okay, fine, yeah. So I waited for the people to leave the shop. And then I went round the back to sort of get ready to unplug everything. And then these more people came in. So I said, I'd better leave it for now. And it's really, really awkward. It's one of these broadbands that they've got. It's quite a quick connection once they've got it going, but it takes about... I don't know what it is. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes for the ADSL to synchronize.
Really?
It takes ages to synchronize, and then once it connects, it's something like a 17 meg download or something, and then and then it works perfectly fine. So I can't turn it off, because if I turn it off, I can't just turn it back on again really quickly, because you've got to give it 5 minutes for it to come back on again. Ultimately, tomorrow I'm going to go back, try and get the internet started on there at least, and then start doing. Basically, then make sure all the internet works throughout the system. So I've got VLAN 0 is on ports 1 to 5, and the local SSID. And then VLAN 1 and VLAN 2 are on port 6. So I've just got to go through everything and test everything and then show them how to do this, that, and the other. The new till system at the back has to be connected up. They need that for the next bit where they're doing training on the new... They've got like a tablet /till... / wireless printer, and they need the internet on so they can get some training on how that particular system works. But all in all, it's been quite an interesting week with all of that lot. Again, it's one of those things. I knew what I wanted to do, and it's just a matter of, you know, what to click on. You know, what to select, what this means and what that means. Which does actually lead me to another question, because one of the options on the access point, not the router itself, but on the access point, was the term isolate. And what I got from that is it's isolated all users from each other user within that particular LAN. So that's what I've took from it anyway. So what I've done at the moment, I've selected VLAN 2, which is the public Wi-Fi, to isolate. So then person A connected to the Wi-Fi cannot connect to person B connected to the Wi-Fi. I assume that's what it means.
Yeah, basically, she says, you know, if people stop scanning other people on the network.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know if you know, if you're at home and you've got one of those little tools you can get for your Android phone, or a bit like IP scan, IP angle, where you literally scan it, and obviously you can scan the network and you can see whatever devices what are connected. But obviously, what with isolated means, it basically means that it stops that from happening. So it means that it stops one MAC address speaking to another MAC address on that network.
Yeah. So that sounds like it's a right thing to do then, doesn't it? For that.
Yes.
But I mean, I didn't want to do it for the office ones, because that's just going to isolate one machine from another, and we don't particularly want that. But the only unfortunate thing is it didn't isolate it from the router's IP address.
No.
That's the only thing it didn't. But I mean, I thought, okay, but that's what I took from that, isolate. So I thought, okay, well, I'll isolate the public part of it. It's just an extra bit of security, really.
If you did that, if you isolated this router, you wouldn't be able to speak to router, and obviously you wouldn't be able to get any internet access.
Yeah, okay, so that's one thing I'm going to look for tomorrow, is what you suggested up in system maintenance, I think it is. I've got the manual on a CD, so I can look it up as well if I need to.
I can't think off the top of my head, I know where to go if you... where it's basically like it's called like restrict management or something, or management IP. It might be called management IPs.
Okay.
And you can basically put something like 192.168.1.0/24 if you wanted the first network to have access to it. You see what I mean? What you wanted to.
So that's what I've been. That's been my major thing this week. Couple of other little boring ones, I suppose. I had a hell of a time with one machine. It's behind me at the minute. I had loads of kind of rootkits on it and all sorts of stuff. You get rid of stuff and so it'll come back again. Oh, it was horrible. But
yeah, so you go to system maintenance management, and that's where you actually went to change the HTTP port in the first place. It was 80. Obviously, I guess that's where you changed it to another number.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I changed it in there too. Yeah, you can change the port of HTTP. You can change the FTP port. You can change all the ports there. Yeah.
And I think that page there is where you basically go in there, and you can basically say what IP addresses you want to basically manage it for.
Okay. Yeah, I know the one. I know the one you mean. So
here it is. It says access list from the internet, but I'm guessing that there's a thing that says LAN access control underneath it, which you can basically tick saying LAN management from the LAN. So I wonder if you can say that you can only apply it to LAN 1, 2, 3, or 4, or underneath it says access LAN list from the thing. So I'm guessing that's where you can put the 192.168.0.0.0, and then you can put the subject mask in, and I think that will basically do what you want it to do, basically.
Okay, yeah, I shall try that. So that sounds pretty good. But I can also keep the port number changed as well, couldn't I?
Yeah,
that's just an added.
That's what I always do in a separator.
Yeah.
So I was going to talk to you about a bit about spanning tree.
Yeah.
And what it does and how it can help you. So we're talking about switches now, which you can actually manage, not like the cheapo ones you buy from, which you basically can't log on to and change things. So what spanning trees is basically stop loops in networks. I don't know if you've had this in the past. If you've got two switches and you've got a link between the two of them, so that obviously that those, if you've got switches on switch, PCs on switch one can speak to PCs on switch two. Yep. And if someone accidentally puts a cable in between the two switches, we've often many a times, it basically creates a loop in the network, and your switch will basically start lighting up like a Christmas tree, and then you won't be able to start passing any traffic. Have you come across that before?
I haven't, no, but I think I know what you mean.
Yeah. So you basically can't have two links in a switch, between two switches. So what's causing that loop is that, let's say you've got a P, say you have put a loop in a network, what happens is let's say you've got a PC and it basically puts a broadcast out. What a Switch does is it looks at that port and goes, oh, I've got a broadcast. I need to broadcast that down all ports except the port I received it on. So what happens is it puts the broadcast out to all the ports. That then puts all the broadcast traffic down to the second switch. The second switch goes, oh, I need to broadcast this to all my devices except the port I've sent it down. So it knows it came down from the first link, but it doesn't really know about the second link to the switch. So it pushes all the traffic out again to all those ports. And obviously then it puts that broadcast packet back to the first switch. And the first switch goes, oh, a broadcast packet. I'm now going to send that down all my ports except the one I received it on. And obviously that sends it down the original link. And that basically just floods the network. In this case, it's big and around and around and around and around and around and around the circle.
So you've had people who have accidentally, no doubt, plugged in a second cable.
Yeah.
That's what you mean.
So basically that's...
It sounds a good idea in a way. Cause, well, what I mean is it sounds like if you put two cables between two, then you'd have twice the bandwidth.
Yeah.
It sounds like that, but it doesn't, does it?
No. But we've had it where people, like, if they plug the port in, like, they've got a cable and that's been unplugged on the floor and they plug it back into the net. So there's a cable unplugged on the floor.
Yeah.
And then plug it back into the patch panel and then obviously then it creates a loop. So what you were talking about then, you were saying it'd be good if you had put two ports into greater bandwidth.
Yeah.
And you know what I was telling you about this last week or the week before, where it was telling you that it gets a bit tricky what it's called. So in HP terms, what the switches I mainly deal with is called the E-series switches, okay? And these are the basic ones that are running the ProCurve software, which is HP's original software. And they're called E-series switches, and that's called trunking. So basically what you're doing is you're basically combining two single channels together into a trunk.
Yeah.
And what that means is you can have twice the greater bandwidth going down those pipes. It's not trickly, because what happens is if you've got one PC on one side talking to the PC on the other switch and it sends traffic down it, what happens is it will just send it down one path. But if you've got let's say you had two PCs and they were talking to two other PCs on the other side, and then you had one link, obviously they'll only get half of gig graphics each. But because if you had two links in a trunk, the switch would send one packet for the switch traffic between PC A and B, let's see. It would get sent down the first link, and the second traffic from PC, like PC C to PC D, that would get sent down the second traffic. So you would each would get a terabyte worth of traffic.
Right.
So in Cisco world, this is called Ether channel. And that's why, but trunking in Cisco world is basically the VLAN tagging, what we were talking about the other day.
Yeah.
So you can see how some people can get confusing. And then again, there's another term, which HP make two lots of switches. So the first lot is called the E-series, and then the second lot, which is basically their high-end switches, is called an A-series switches, which is basically old Freecom Comware software, which is a bit like the Cisco when you go in to configure it. And but they're called link aggregation. So you've got three different manufacturers there, or models of switches, which use the same term, is using the same kind of thing. So whenever you bond, as I say, bonding the ports together, you could have it. You can basically have more channels in it. So you can have two, but you can have, I don't want limits. I think that might be like 12 or 16 limit you could have if you wanted to have 12 links or whatever together. But I mainly do a couple, so that would give you two gigs links between the switches. So there is actually a way of stopping this happening, causing these loops. And the reason, like, I've set it up in my network at this customer site is that we wanted to have backup links between switches, so that if something goes wrong with a switch or a link or a switch port, it fails over to do it. So this spanning tree, it's basically a protocol called the spanning tree, which basically stops this happening. And it's basically it's a standard 802.1d. And what happens is though, when a switch is in participating in a spanning tree, a BDU packet is basically sent out of every 3 seconds out of the switch to find out what other switches are in its neighbourhood, so it can start working at. And so the switch sends a BDU out of all of its ports. So switch one will then, and switch two will notice that it's connected to each other. Okay. And the first thing it needs to do is it needs to elect who is the root bridge. And this is referred to, this is basically because of the old days before switches were a thing called bridges, which is basically, it's like a switch, but it was all software, not hardware. And if there's no configuration set, and that's because basically what you can do is there's a number of, you can configure the switches, what the root bridge is going to be, so you can basically detect which is going to be the root switch. And basically the first one is 4096, and the second switch will be 8192, and the third will be 11288, and the third one will be 16384, and so on and so on and so on. There's 8 addresses of those. But if you haven't configured what the root switch is, basically, the switch with the lowest MAC address wins. So, normally, what that means is that if you're on your network and you're the oldest switch in your network will win. So, you could have a root switch, which is like a really old switch, which isn't really up for the job, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, what you should do is you should always make sure that you configure who's got the biggest priority on that switch. So, I configured my first of the core switches as it's basically the root switch, okay. And then once that's done, so it basically has election to tell you who is the root switch. Once that's who between they decide who that root switch is, the switches which are connected to those switches have to decide which is the root port back to the root switch. And again, it's done the same thing where it will basically work out who is what port links. It's designed on things like the port speed of the switch, is like a 100 meg switch or a gig switch. And if it will choose the highest port speed first. Okay. And once if they're both the same port, what happens is that it will choose the one with the lowest port number on it, okay? And it will start sending traffic down that port. And the next thing it will do on the second switch, it will basically start choosing a designated port, and it will basically say a designated port are the closest to the root switch. So on the first switch, on the root port, all the ports are designated ports because it knows it's the closest back to the root switch. What happens then is on the second switch, which obviously it's picked its root port, it will then look at what other ports are it's got connected to a designated port on the other switch. And if it sees it's got a designated port on the other switch, it will basically put that port in blocking mode. And it won't send traffic down that port. And that basically stops the loop, if you see what I mean.
Right.
So it basically blocks that port off. And what that means is that now there's not a loop in the network, because it's decided itself that there's no loop in the network. And the problem with the spanning tree is it means that the original spanning tree is like better than the 1980s, very slow. It can take up to 30 seconds to work out who's going to be the root bridge and everything, if you see what I mean. So you could have your network down for 30 seconds while it decides what port it's going to be blocking down. And also, if you ever make a change to your network, if you add another switch in, it will take another 30 seconds for it to basically decide who's going to be the winner and which is going to be block ports, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, it's quite amusing that actually that it takes so long. But is that because of the age? Was that originally started with did you say software or hardware originally?
In the software, because basically a bridge is like you basically used to get hubs, which basically you just basically put all traffic out all ports.
Yeah,
it's not intelligent. Then they invented bridges, which were a bit more intelligent.
Yeah,
and they were all designed in software, so there was no like microprocessors on the board. It was all done in software. And then they came up with switches, which then obviously do everything in hardware and software together. So basically, every time I say it takes 60 seconds, right? Yeah. Then they came up with something called rapid spanning tree,
okay,
which basically makes the convergence quicker, which does it in like 3 milliseconds.
Well, that's a bit better.
So, yes. see, that's the thing. And then obviously, and what you've also got to worry about is like, the standard of different things about different things don't support it by different switches. Because if you've got like a Cisco switch and HP switches, by default Cisco uses its own thing called per spanning tree VLAN, which is a Cisco priority technology. And so you have to be careful when you're into that logicing different kinds of switches. So also what you can do is that if you really wanted to be clever, you can set up multiple spanning tree, which is a thing called, which is quite supported by all the manufacturers, is that you can have different VLANs going down different trunks. So that you can, let's say you've got those 2 1-gigabyte links, obviously in a blocking mode, only one of those links would be working. But with multiple spanning tree, you can figure it so that VLAN 1 would go down the first trunk, and the VLAN 2 would go down the second link, if you see what I mean. So you're basically using the thing. So, so basically that's what happens with these BDU things. And what you can also do with the HP switches is you can set up commands called loop protection, which basically stops people, like I said about where people have accidentally plugged cables back into the wall and caused loops and then wonders why things have happened. I've had it in the past where I said to the customer, look, what have you changed? What cable have you plugged in? Go and plug it. And I've been on site where I've had loops in the network, and I literally had to go and unplug all the network and then slowly plug the cables back into the network one by one. And then until you work out the one when you plug the last one in, it makes a, it like a Christmas tree again. So, and you can also do things like enable things like BDU protection, which basically, if someone comes in a rogue network and puts a switch in, which is basically already got a spanning tree config on, obviously that will muck up your network. You can basically filter out the BDU, so the BDU packets won't get put into your core network, and then obviously they won't get reconfigured. So so that's a spanning tree, basically. Yeah. And the reason I was using it is because, as they say, they had these they had 8 switches on site and they're all daisy chain. So if we lost one switch, and we've got 6 switches now. We reduced 8 switches down to 6, and what we've got is that we've got 2 core switches, basically got the servers plugged on it, and then from the servers switches we've got a cable 2 gig port from each of the core switches going into a 48 port 1 gig switch. And I'll basically put it in the graphic in a diagram. So from the first switch, core switch, we've got a 2 gig link, trunk link to the 1 gig switch, so that's switch 3. And then from the second switch we've got a 2 gig trunk to switch 4, and that basically means that they could say, so we've got 48 ports, because there's 48 port switches, and so that's kind of thing. And what that would mean though, if switch 4 or Switch 3, if we ever lost Core Switch 1 or Core Switch 2, we would basically use all the traffic to that one of those switches. So what I did is I put a backup link between Switch 3 and Switch 4. And what happens is obviously spanning tree, when you do that, it obviously detects loop and it puts it blocks that link between Switch 3 and Switch 4. But if we ever lose a link between the switches, or we lose Switch 1 and 2, it obviously goes, oh, hang on, I lost my switch. And it obviously spanning tree will reconfigure itself and then it will unblock that switch. And then that will be back to how it was.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean. So I'll put a link in the show notes for that. But yeah, it's really good. It's quite complicated how it works, but you can do so a lot with spanning tree. And spanning tree is one of those things where you need to get your head around it. And every time I forget about it, I have to come back like a month later or something, I have a problem or something. It takes me a little bit of time to configure it, really. So I'll get my head around it again. So
it's something useful to keep in the back of your head in case you need to come back to it, isn't it? At some point you're going to need it. So literally, when you plug in a second, you're saying you're lighting it like a Christmas tree. When you plug in a separate second cable, now when you were doing it cable by cable, and then all of a sudden it hit one. I mean, is it literally every light on the port just every light on the switch just come on and stay on?
Yeah, go solid.
Yeah, and then you think, ah, that doesn't look right, because generally they should be flickering and flashing and. Yeah. Making nice little flickery patterns, and when they just come on, like, so you thought, ah, that's the one. It's a process of elimination, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you're in a situation like that, plug in until something goes wrong. I mean, that's the same thing I was doing, because I was messing up my VLANs and my tags, and I just did it step by step until I did something that I did it wrong. And that's when I realised what I'd done. So when you were talking about trunking, and also you said about one of the things you said to me was to say trunk, how did you put it, trunk VLAN 1 to port 1 or something, didn't you say? Which is
right, okay.
Is that in the sort of, I know it's not quite as complicated as all that, but is that in the same vein as you like, if you like, because we're putting two VLANs down one cable.
Yeah.
Is that called trunking?
And that's what I'm saying, it gets confusing when you start calling different things, different vendors call different things.
Yes. Okay, so if we talk about the same thing, we've got trunking.
Link aggregation.
Oh, right.
Ether channel if you're talking Cisco world.
So are VLAN tags, are they a different? Are they the same thing?
Yeah, that's the other thing you were doing the other day with the... when you're sending all the traffic down that one pipe between the back of the shop and the front of the shop. So
all different names for different manufacturers, which does get confusing, because, you know, and especially if you had some kind of issue and you wanted to Google something, if you use one particular term, there's two or three different terms for exactly the same thing, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
If you needed to do that. So, well, that all sounds pretty interesting. I mean, I've certainly had a interesting week setting up all of that. And you've had an interesting week plugging everything in.
Yes.
And when you say there were daisy chains, there was literally in a line. So one would plug into the other, one would plug into the other. So
yes.
So if you lost
switches,
how many? Eight. So if you lost switch 2, then every computer from switch 2 up to switch 8 would go off.
Yes.
And the original ones would stay on.
So there's two core switches, core switch 1 and core switch 2. It's switch 1 and switch 2. We had a 2. There's a trunk between those two points. Okay, so there's a link aggregation, so there's 2 gig link between the two. Between switch 2 and switch 3 was a one link, which was 100... meg.
Right, okay.
So you had about 150 computers going down 100 meg links.
So everything into 3, everything into 4, 5, 6, 7 and 8. Every one of those computers were shoved down 100 meg. It must have been a nightmare.
Yes.
Is that where you got called in? Is that the initial problem?
Yes. It just, yes, because it took me ages to find it, because no one had basically network diagrammed or worked at. And, yeah, so I basically had to go in there and work out how all the switches connected together. And this is all done remotely. So with a managed switch, you can do, there's a thing called LLDP, I think it's called Link Local Detection Discovery Protocol, and you can run that on the switch, and it will tell you what switches are connected to it. So I made a diagram of what it was. And what we were worked out, they were moaning that all their phones were going down because they were running VoIP phones. They were working out that something was happening, that all the switches kept cutting out. And in the end, what I had to do is I worked out there's a 100 meg link. So I basically used PRTG to like monitor that bandwidth. And then I noticed that it was only 100 meg. And when the people were moaning that all the phones were going knackered, the pipe was getting 100, was being maxed out. And I then tracked it down using another protocol called NTOP, which is basically a monitor you can... I might have heard me called a mirror port. So what you can do is you can say anything on this one port, I want to basically output on another port. And what you can do with the other thing is that you can put that traffic into a program and you can analyze what's coming out of that port. So you say anything on this trunk port, replicate it or reproduce it on another port. And what you do is you plug a PC into that, which is running Zentop software, which again is this free Linux software, and it will tell you what the top talkers are and etc, etc, and it will show you a little graph, a little pie chart, and it will show you who the max, and it was a SQL developer pulling all the SQL data from another site over the network, which is causing the link to go all down. Right. It's basically maxing it out. So
that you figured all that out remotely, but yes. Then ultimately you had to go down there and do something about it.
Yeah, and that was where I was did the last episode when I was stuck in a hotel room the night before.
Oh, right, so, yes. So you thought, hang on, this problem deserves a visit.
Yes.
I
basically found this problem out about 2 years ago, and it's only just got round to get permission to get it sorted out. Oh, basically.
God. Excellent, yeah. I was going to say, so when you got there, was it a rat's nest, or was it quite neatly done, or just...
No, it was a rat's nest. We had to spend all day sorting it out.
How many were there? How many went?
I was... Only me, but the company I worked for, they had two engineers on site. I basically just configured all the switches and everything, and they did all the recabling kind of thing.
So was this a Saturday then, was it?
Or a Sunday, right? Work on the Saturday. Yeah.
It's that inconvenient thing of everyone needs the computers during the week.
Mm.
It's like me at this place, can't even go in the shop without, can't even disconnect the internet for 5 minutes. So that's all interesting stuff. So, where are we now? They're only nearly up to 50 minutes. You're gone.
Yeah. Cool. I think we can leave it there for a week and that'd be good. So, yeah. All right. Well, it's good talking to you as always and stuff. So,
yeah, no problem. Yeah. We'll have more to report on next week. And I don't know how long Jerry's away for, but he might be back. So we'll see. So, okay. Yeah, that's great. So, we can get us on our email, can't we? Or what's our email address?
Yep. It's mail@adminadminpodcast.co.uk, and all our social media things on our website, which is www.adminadminpodcast.co.uk. And we'll see you all soon, guys.
So, okay, see everyone. Bye now.
Bye. Bye.